Remember the feeling of rushing home from school, tossing your backpack on the floor, and turning on the TV just in time for the afternoon block of cartoons? Way back when life was all about schoolyard rivalries and making it home before the streetlights came on? Well, what if those Saturday morning vibes collided with an action-packed sci-fi adventure? In the new comic, The Ruth Avenue Raiders, the best, and let's be honest, the cockiest elementary school football team on Ruth Ave is about to face a defensive line unlike anything they've ever seen. We're talking interdimensional robots from Sector 7. When these kids are challenged to a match where the stakes are way higher than just bragging rights, they realize their old playbook won't save them. It's a hilarious, action-packed story about friendship, teamwork, and learning to step out of your comfort zone, all before the sun goes down. If you know a young reader looking for a new graphic novel, or if you grew up on the heart of Hey Arnold, the playground politics of Recess, or the what-could-go-wrong energy of Dexter's Lab, this is the book you've been waiting for. It's The Sandlot Meets Transformers, created by Mad Cave Studios Talent Search winner Damian Becton and artist Marina Otegua Ruiz. The Ruth Avenue Raiders is now live on Kickstarter, and you do not want to miss the kickoff. Head over to www.ruthavenueraiders.com right now to secure your copy of The Ruth Avenue Raiders, only available until June 24th. By joining the squad early, you'll stay in the loop and get access to exclusive early bird rewards and updates that won't be available anywhere else. That's www.ruthavenueraiders.com. Help us bring this 90s-inspired adventure to life. Winner go Chrome.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Alex in partnership with CoverPrice.com, the ultimate comic book resource, highlighting a book from CoverPrice's weekly top 10 report for the week ending June 15th. These are the comics collectors chased the hardest last week, driving demand and pushing prices across the aftermarket. This week's highlight, Avengers Armageddon number 1, which came bagged with an already existing but still pretty neat Magic the Gathering Warstorm Surge card. While it's extremely difficult to play Magic the Gathering with one card, the Ryan Stegman cover for the kickoff of the event, which features Wolverine and Iron Man trying to restrain the Red Hulk from probably smushing Spider-Man into bug guts, has hit $24 for a near-mint copy. Hey, that could buy you a whole deck of Magic cards. That's easier to play. That was a highlight from CoverPrice's weekly top 10 report. Want to learn what your collection is worth right now? CoverPrice.com does all the hard work for you, tracking aftermarket sales for both raw and slab comics. CoverPrice.com lets you know what your comics are actually selling for. Interested in weekly new releases, FOCs, trending comic lists, and a ton of other great content? CoverPrice has you covered. Visit CoverPrice.com/comicbookclub today to get 1 month of CoverPrice for just $1. That's CoverPrice.com/comicbookclub. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And we've got another bonus episode for you today with a great guest, one of our favorite guys to talk to, and he has an awesome new project on Kickstarter called The OZ. Ladies and gentlemen, David Popose. David, hello.
Hey, welcome. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you guys so much for having me. It is always a pleasure to catch up. I am so excited to talk about the return of The OZ to Kickstarter for its third and final issue. This book has been a long time coming, and I'm so excited for us to finally bring all three issues back. For those who aren't familiar with the book, it's Mad Max meets the Wizard of Oz, the story of Dorothy Gale's granddaughter, an Iraq war veteran who's caught up in a tornado and stranded in the war-torn land of Oz, where she learns that not only were her grandmother's tall tales all true, but that her killing of both wicked witches and then her vanishing, all it wasn't a happy ending. It was just a power vacuum, not unlike Baghdad. And so now our new Dorothy is teaming up with her grandmother's former friends, the Tin Soldier, the Prince of Lions, and Jack Pumpkinhead, in order to bring peace to the occupied zone, or as the locals call it, the OZ.
Oh, you got that pitch down. I love it. Now, this popped up on Kickstarter a couple of days ago. It is, not to blow it up your spot too much, but it is successful. It was funded, I think, in 5 hours. You hit the $6,000 goal. It's, as I'm looking at it right now,
congratulations.
It's up about 14K, and I'll just mention people can pledge it until July 8th if they want to check it out.
Oh, nice.
So, as you mentioned, though, you've done two issues before. This is the final issue. Obviously, you've had a lot going on,
sure.
But that's come in the middle. But why
why finish the OZ now? Why was now the right time to put this up here?
Well, it was really, we've been working on this since the last campaign. And I, you know, it's one of those things I always want to sort of explain the behind the scenes, because it would be very easy to sort of make a narrative saying, oh, Pepos got tapped at Marvel and then he forgot about the OZ. And I want to make everybody know that wasn't the case. This book has been fully written since before the first Kickstarter launched.
So it's the artist's fault. I got it. All right. Yeah.
happened was, you know, it's our amazing artist, Ruben Rojas. Really, it was just sort of kind of life kind of sideswiped him a little bit in some good ways, in some ways that were a little more challenging for him, in that he got married, he had a child. He was in Spain during the worst of COVID. So the economy was really bad during all that. And I believe there was something with either one of his parents or one of his wife's parents, but it was a lot to juggle on top of a day job and raising a child. And so he kind of had to Shawshank his way through this issue. And so this issue, by the way, is double sized, you know, at 44 pages.
Oh, wow.
So it was one of those things. I thought long and hard about it. You know, our previous Kickstarter went a little past what we were expecting in terms of the time frame, and that was because when Ruben and I had talked about it, he underestimated a little bit how long it was going to take for him to finish. And so I knew for the third Kickstarter, I wanted the book to be 100% lock, stock, and barrel done, which it is.
Smart.
And so talking with him, you know, he was working on the third one as soon as he finished the second one. And so I chatted with him, and he was kind of like, you know, it's going to take time. And I thought a lot about it, and I thought, you know, first off, I wanted this book to be consistent from beginning to end. That it felt cohesive because it had the same creative team from start to finish. Because I knew when you read it from issue one to issue three, that it would really hit like a truck if we had the same team. But also, not only did I feel like I owed that to our readership, our passionate and patient readership, but I owed that to Ruben. You know, he really is the heart and soul of the book. He breathed so much life into the Occupied Zone with these sort of post-apocalyptic fantasy designs. And so I said to him, you know, just get it done when you can. Mm-hmm. And so he and I have been in contact almost every other week since the last campaign. Just sort of doing status checks, just being like, hey, what's going on? How you doing? Where are we at? I feel like at times probably poor Ruben wanted to throttle me. but, you know, he finished his inks in the fall. And then we had Whitney Kogar, our amazing colorist. She was working on everything piecemeal, because when we weren't sure what Ruben's time frame was going to be, obviously, you know, the rest of the creative team had other work they had to work around. So Whitney got her colors done around the end of the year. And then I did our lettering pass, which for those who aren't familiar with a lettering pass is, you know, it's basically you write your script, you give it to an artist, the artist draws it. And then now you look back on that script and knowing that it's going to be put in the art, and you figure out, like, what do I need to trim? Does this line still work? Does it match what's on the page? And that was a really amazing kind of out-of-body experience for me, because this is something that I had written in 2020. Mm-hmm. Now being able to revisit that, you know, I wrote it as a writer who was younger and scrappier and had no idea what his future held. Yeah. I wasn't working at Marvel when I wrote this book. And so being able to revisit it with a sort of more seasoned, experienced hand, it was kind of fun being like, oh, that was kind of bold what I did back then. But then finding ways to kind of like trim fat and figure out the ways to punch up certain lines while still making it read consistent from the two issues that came before. And so T.C. Hopkins then worked in the lettering and finished that recently. And so that sort of was why now is because I wanted to do this first off when it was 100% done. And also when I had a clean runway that there wasn't going to be any announcements from any other publishers, which those are out of my control when they decide to announce it, that might cannibalize the spotlight for this book. This book is so important to me. This is a book that is really special to me, both professionally and personally. You know, I love the Kickstarter community because when we took that leap of faith, they caught us. They were the ones that really empowered me as a creator to say, I can assemble a team, I can build a story, and the readership will come. And so, you know, like, you know, this book helped get me noticed at Marvel. This book won me a Ringo Award in 2021 issue. Won our whole team, which I think was very fitting because this is a team effort. I say, even personally, you know, my wife is 8 months pregnant right now.
Congratulations. What do you think is going to happen first, the baby or the Kickstarter ads?
Boy, you know, it was. I'm telling you, it's really TBD at this moment. Right now, the baby will come like 48 hours after the Kickstarter wraps.
Okay, you know what? I'm going to throw this out there for your wife. Make a bunch of stretch goals jokes. She'll love that.
Yeah. Oh boy,
she'll love it.
But I say this because we did IVF, and I wouldn't have been able to do IVF. No, we hadn't done these Kickstarters. So the OZ made like a material difference, not just in my career, but in my family's lives. So this is something that has been near and dear to me. I've had people ask me at every convention, when's the OZ coming back? And I'm like, as soon as this thing is done, we're off to the races. So it's been a long time coming. And I will say, you know, seeing those final pages was a very different experience from every other time I finished a book. Usually when I finish a book, it's just exhaustion. You know, I've crossed the finish line and I can collapse. It was like opening up a time capsule, you know, and seeing, you know, the creator I was when I started and the creator I am today. And I got to kind of look back and be like, you know, kid, you did good. you know, and now I can take it from here. There's really just this look of this feeling of gratitude and compassion to the writer I was back then, the one who had no idea what future lay ahead of him. And so this is a book that I will say, you know, I've had a whole ass career since the last Kickstarter came out. You know, I had just started, I'd just been tapped at Marvel for Savage Avengers as I was running that campaign, but nobody knew that yet. And so I really am excited to do, you know, we have print and digital catch up options on this. So you can get all three issues. You can mix and match the various variant covers and our, you know, as add ons. I'm really excited for people who didn't know who I was in 2021 to discover this campaign and get to see some of my very best work and get to read the whole thing in one shot.
That's I mean, awesome. You're touching on this a little bit anyway. Yeah. Obviously, you got to do the lettering pass, which you could do like little tweaks here and there. But what about thematically when you look back on it? Because a lot has changed in the world as well. And I assume our evolving look at war as well as just like literally like the Wizard of Oz. Maybe that's changed in the past couple of years as well.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think in certain ways the world maybe hasn't so much changed since those first issues came out as much as it's doubled down on certain themes. You know, I mean, the themes of the OZ, it really comes down to, well, maybe I should go first rewind a little bit of how this book came to be, because then I can explain how I sort of stumbled into those themes, which is it happened on accident. I started writing this book on the heels of Spencer and Locke. Which was What If Calvin and Hobbes Grew Up in Sin City. It was my first book. And I always say, that's a book I had no idea how it was going to land. You know, I knew that there was going to be some people who loved it for the audacity and to see, like, can this idiot make the motorcycle stunt jump work? And then there were going to be purists who were just like, Bill Watterson is a pioneer and a trailblazer, and how dare you even, you know, do anything to this?
Yeah.
Thankfully, you know, the dust settled and overwhelmingly people liked that book. We were nominated for 5 Ringo Awards for it. And so I was like, okay, maybe I'm not going to be run out of town. Maybe I can do this. And so I started coming up with other ideas of different genres. And so Going to the Chapel was one of those first ideas. And my long gestating sci-fi book, Grand Theft Astro, was the second idea. And OZ was the third. And it came from, I knew fantasy was a genre that I really liked. I liked the how you can bend metaphor and theme into the, you know, you can make the subtext text. And so I was writing down fantasy books, you know, just iconic things that I could maybe draw inspiration from. I wrote down Lord of the Rings. I wrote down Harry Potter before we all found out that J.K. Rowling was like a virulent transphobe. I wrote down The Wizard of Oz, and my computer froze. You know, the weird bits of serendipity. My computer froze and the cursor was right in the middle of the word Oz. And that's when I thought, oh, maybe this could be, you know, that could be maybe be an acronym. And then I thought, you know, as I was putting pieces together, oh, occupied zone. And that's when I was like, oh, this is a war story. Because, you know, like I said in the pitch, just looking at the text, you know, Dorothy kills two wicked witches and she pulls the mask off on the Wizard of Oz who runs before it gets too hot. That's three out of the four major power pillars gone in a week. And then she leaves. And so, you know, I thought, oh, this is definitely like the forever wars that we're in currently. And so it also kind of was an opportunity for me to revisit some stories that I had been told. I used to be a newspaper reporter. That was my first job out of college. And I had interned in newsrooms all around the country before that. And I was a general assignment reporter. So I got weird sort of niches. I did like the crime beat at night. I did state politics. I wound up on the local veterans beat. And I remember doing a big feature on sort of what were the resources in Berkshire County, Massachusetts, and also talking with veterans about sort of the challenges and struggles they faced reintegrating back into civilian life. And those stories really struck me in that, you know, we grow up in this society, you know, and so did they. And then they go overseas and they're in this much more regimented military environment. Sometimes they've seen combat. Sometimes they are coming back with PTSD or traumatic brain injury or just having seen people, whether it's the people that they've served with or civilians, die right in front of them, or they feared for their own lives. And then they come back here and it is so alien to them. You know, our pacing is so much different and chaotic. Our priorities are very different. Nothing's organized. Everything's every man for himself. And that's on top of if you're struggling with PTSD or traumatic brain injury or what have you. And so that kind of became the theme for our character of Dorothy. Her first line is, they say there's no place like home. But for me, home is a place that doesn't exist anymore. And I feel like that's something that I think we're all kind of feeling in the year of our Lord 2026 in some capacity, because I think we all grow up with this idea of what our country is and what its ideals are. And I think we're all disillusioned at some point, whether you're, you know, reading a history book or reading the headlines. But I think the last 10 years have been a particularly dark time for us, that there are people who revel in this, that there's fascism really kind of trying to creep through every corner. And so the idea of a character who is fighting that, who is also those struggling with sort of the unintended consequences of their good intentions. I think, you know, the idea of home's a place that doesn't exist anymore. That's the past. Those are sort of our rose-colored glasses, our memories of what has come before our image of the Wizard of Oz, that the Technicolor Warner Brothers film. And then we see, oh, but if that is true, it would not look like this anymore. And so we're sort of in this stage of mourning right now, I think, of sort of this past we can't revisit. And how do we sort of overcome the traumas of today and maybe build a better future that seems perpetually out of reach? And so that's why I think the OZ, you know, in ways I could have never anticipated when I wrote it, it still feels resonant. It is a story that, no pun intended, feels evergreen. And I can tell you, like, I was just at Fan Expo Denver a couple weeks ago. And knowing that the Kickstarter was about to launch, I brought some copies of the OZ. And it was amazing to see people who hadn't heard of the book. That thing flew off the table. People, I think, seemed to really want to see somebody who, you know, we're all feeling it right now. And we all have a past that, you know, that hurts us in some way. And I think those are the characters I love to explore, is we start them in a dark place, but they have that redemptive climb out. And that's, I think, something that brings hope to people. It certainly brings hope to me, because I feel like if Dorothy can do it, maybe I can do it too. Nice.
Love it. Yeah. I do want to ask you about one of your other projects for a second. Really? So you've been working on Space Ghost for a while, and something that is teased is that there's going to be a Space Ghost Herculoids crossover coming, which sounds wild and weird. I know we're a little off from that, but what can you tell us about that?
My childhood just got excited by this idea.
What about your adulthood?
Yeah. So I'm very excited for what's coming up in Space Coast. We just had issue 12 come out yesterday, as we're talking. And that was sort of the big capstone of our Tempest the Time Master three-parter. He's sort of the villain who's been kind of lurking in the shadows all across season two. And we had some kind of secrets for him, something that I had been hiding in the back pocket for quite some time. But diehard Space Coast fans are going to be like, oh, he went there. And if you don't know that, what I'm talking about, you can read the issue and you can Wikipedia it. But we've got our Space Coast annual that's coming in July. And that's kind of like the bow on top of season two. It was originally not part of the outline. And that's why you see in the solicit copy for issue 12, oh, this is the final issue of the run. Because when the solicit copy was written, it was the last issue of the run. But my editor, Joe Rybant, season two of Space Coast, unlike season one, which we had a firm runway of 13 issues, season two was just the little engine that could, that kept getting expanded over and over and over again. We started at 5 issues, but I countered and asked for 8. And then I got 10, and then we grew to 12. And then as I was about to write 12, my editor, Joe Rybant, said, season one was 13 issues. We need an annual. And I, you know, I did scream into a pillow and pull my hair for a little bit. And then I realized, oh, no, like instead, this is great. This is extra runway. And so rather than speed running through the emotional fallout of the end of issue 12, we can devote a whole issue to that. And without spoiling too much, Space Ghost has been walking the tightrope our whole series of the, being a superhero and being a surrogate father figure to Jan and Jace. And if you've read issue 12, something happened that he didn't beat Tempest without a cost. And so he's having kind of this long dark night of the soul. This annual is our answer to the first issue of season two, which was a conversation. It was Jan and Jace talking with their grandfather, Dr. Henry Contra, about why does the universe need a Space Ghost? And more importantly, why is the man behind the mask so important to them? All while keeping their secret identities intact. And we saw Space Ghost, meanwhile, fighting Toymaker, the Tempest's first lieutenant. This annual is sort of our answer to that. And that Space Ghost now is asking, does the universe still need a Space Ghost? Can I continue on this path and still serve these children? Do I need to make a decision here? Can I still be in these children's lives? You know, and so he's having a conversation with a very unexpected source. It's sort of a love letter to one of my favorite comics. But meanwhile, we see Space Ghost and the twins. They're having a fun adventure against some of my favorite Space Ghost villains. They're so obscure. Magnus and the Alien, if you're a Space Stars fan. Basically, Magnus is like the Stilt Man of the Space Ghost universe. He's got armor with telescoping arms and legs. And then the Alien is sort of this mysterious reality warping being who speaks in his own weird language. I wrote dialogue for him. And then I asked Taylor Esposito, I was like, make this illegible, please. And so they're an odd couple, but they're a fun pair. They've been stealing from Salvage Worlds in the wake of Tempest's rampage. And they've stolen a piece of tech that's particularly volatile that could blow up half the city if it's not contained quickly. So Space Ghost and the twins are playing this game of hot potato. Unfortunately, there's more to this heist than meets the eye. And once Space Ghost realizes what Magnus's real end game is here, it's going to take this crisis of faith that's been brewing and sort of build it to a head. However, on top of all this just kind of fun, emotional, you know, bow on top of season two, we are also teeing up our big Space Ghost event that's kicking off in September. And like you said, we are bringing in Alex Toth's other iconic sci-fi adventurers, the Herculoids, into our run. For those who don't know what the Herculoids are, imagine if Conan the Barbarian lived in space and married Shanna the She-Devil. Their son was like the tween version of Disney's Tarzan, and they hung out with 5 interstellar kaiju to stop pirates and industrialists from pillaging their ecosystem. They're a fun group. You know, Xandor, the space barbarian, who grew up in the pits. He was a gladiator of Kyanite. He fought in the pits side by side with his battle beast Tundro, the living tank, until the Emperor got threatened and sicked his enslaved protoplasm Gloop to kill them all. And it would have been curtains for Xandor and Tundro And poor Gloop, who, you know, he was being enslaved. It was, you know, he didn't want to do this any more than anybody else. And then they are all rescued by the daughter of the village elder, Tara, who's been moonlighting sort of as a freedom fighter, riding the star dragon Zok and flanked by her loyal rock ape Igu. And her philosophy is Amzod is a free world and everyone on it deserves to be free. And that's the mission statement of the Herculoids, is that unlike Space Ghost, who he's a superhero, he defends the defenseless. And while he operates outside of the strictures of the law, I think he still respects the spirit of it. He is the defender of the Galactic Federation. He is ultimately at his core a defender of the status quo. The Herculoids, on the other hand, their mission is to free people and protect people from enslavement and exploitation. They're not going to kill first, but if they do, they're not going to lose any sleep over it. They are firmly anti-establishment, because what has the establishment ever tried to do besides enslave them and steal their stuff? And so this is going to sort of these two differing philosophies are going to kind of come to a head about a mineral called quasarite. And this is sort of my way of extrapolating on the energy rocks from the original cartoon that they'd put in their slingshots and they would explode. Yeah. But there was an episode called The Purple Menace that really I kind of built the whole mythology around, in that these energy rocks also can spur hypermutation. Sort of this mutant flora and fauna that makes Amzod as beautiful and alien as it is dangerous and deadly. And so quasarite, when you are exposed to it, if you ingest it, it can increase your speed and strength and durability. And Xandor and his Herculoids, and Tara and Dorno, by their own unique physiology, they've metabolized quasarite and from the ecosystem their entire lives. So they can go toe-to-toe with somebody like Space Ghost. But also quasarite can power ships and cities and bombs and weapons. And that means somebody's going to make a run for it. Somebody is going to make a grab for the quasarite, and it's going to cause a domino effect that's going to put Xandor and his Herculoids on the warpath. And that's going to put them on a collision course with Space Ghost. And so it's really fun. You know, I love Space Ghost is one of my favorite books because I'm able to inject all these different types of genre DNA into it. Space Ghost as a character is so versatile that so many different types of stories rest organically on his shoulders. And so the Herculoids, you get to inject science fantasy into the sci-fi superhero of it all. But also, I love, you know, playing the tropes as well. As a lifelong comics fan, I love the superhero misunderstanding and then team up. And so this is going to be our big blockbuster. It's a 5-part event. It's our first experiment with real long form storytelling. Jonathan Lau is making these characters his own in a way that looks really incredible. This is the most action packed story we have told in Space Ghost to date. And that is saying something, because I've written a lot of action in this book. But, you know, I knew when we were introducing the Herculoids into our world, we were not going to have 2 years of runway to build these characters like we did with Space Ghost. So I wanted to make sure that when they showed up, it was like an atom bomb. Mm-hmm. that to prove that Xandor and his crew, they can hang with Space Ghost. They are just as tough. And I love that, because Space Ghost is used to, I think he takes a perverse sense of pride. Anyone who's read my book knows he's my grouchy little boy. You know, he's oops all fists. And, you know, I think he takes a perverse sense of pride in knowing that he's the toughest guy in any room. Except Xandor's not from around here, and he's not buying what that creep in a mask is selling. And so there's some friction. You know, these two do not really like each other very much when they meet. And at their core, though, they've got this common thread, which is that they are both fathers who love their children, who will do anything to protect them. And so once they kind of figure that out, they're going to be able to kind of put their differences aside. But we're able to mix and match between the two worlds in some really fun ways. So you'll see the Herculoids in a combat situation in an urban environment, which is like really fun to see them, seeing the different ways they can traverse that. You can see Space Ghost and his team dealing with the dangers in the jungles of Amzod, which there's some secrets in there that are going to really kind of bite our heroes in the ass. We've also got, we're mixing and matching the villains from both sides of the street. So we've got the evil collector, who's one of my favorite Space Ghost villains. He's kind of like the Brainiac of Space Ghost mythology. He likes to shrink people and feed them to his mutant cat. We've sort of recontextualized him as the chief warden of the Galactic Federation, that he's tasked with keeping the worst of the worst under wraps. So he wears that title, the evil collector, as kind of a perverse badge of honor. Of course, he is the evil collector, so he does have ulterior motives. And then meanwhile, from the Herculoid side of the street, we have Mechano, the machine man, who is sort of the evil collector's enslaved android lieutenant. And he's dangerous. He's one of those guys. I took a lot of inspiration from Robot from Invincible, like a kind of a more ominous, menacing version that he's like, he's very polite because he has to be. But you know that if his master sicked him on you, that he's the last thing you see before you die. He's very strong. I'm actually writing a sequence with him right now. And he's ruthless. And so having these two characters together and then a few other threats that I'm keeping in the back pocket, this is going to lead us into Space Ghost Year 3, which is going to be kind of our Brave and the Bold era for Space.
Oh, wow.
Going to kind of expand his universe. So you'll see more of the Herculoids. You'll see some other characters that I've been burning to tell stories with. And, you know, we've got hopefully a long run planned. We're still working out with Dynamite exactly how long season 3 is going to go. Right now, I believe we are committed to 44 issues.
Oh, wow.
I would like to get us to 50. Okay. I have already written the last arc, or I've outlined it, I should say. So we know how this series is ending. So it's just a matter of sort of what the runway is getting there. But this series, you know, I continue to be so amazed and grateful for the way that it is caught on. I mean, similar to the OZ, you know, where that was sort of me, is I had a head full of theories and let's see if any of them work. This was sort of how I approached Space Ghost. You know, the idea of let's try it with done in ones and done in twos, because I don't have that sort of established fan base. I banked on endings being the thing that got people invested emotionally, and that paid off. And the idea of, well, maybe we do a modern reboot. You know, we take all the mythology that came before, but we sort of put our new modern twist on it, and people have really resonated with that. And also just kind of, you know, trusting my gut of just like, I love jumping between genres. Maybe somebody, our readers will like that too. And of course, you know, the moment I saw Jonathan Lau as one of our names, having read his amazing work in Green Hornet with Kevin Smith all those years ago, I was like, it has to be Jonathan. It can't be anybody else but him. I remember telling that specifically to Joe Rybant. You know, we rolled the dice and it paid off. And I'm so grateful for all the readers who've stuck with us sort of on this kind of long running storyline. And I will say, to add a little extra pluggity plug to the mix, I know it's very hard to get the first trade of Space Ghost. I have a bunch of those and they are all add-ons on the OZ Kickstarter. So if you're interested in Space Ghost, we're offering the first year's worth of trades as add-ons or in the cartoon bundle, which is both volumes of Space Ghost, the first two volumes of Speed Racer and Captain Planet, all offered at a discount price.
Well, that's fun. The cartoon bundle. I love it.
Yeah. That also jumps ahead to my next question. I was going to ask you about any fun bonuses on the Kickstarter.
Yes.
But you read your mind.
You read my
mind. Yeah. So, you know, this Kickstarter, I tried to build it in such a way that it was streamlined because, like I said, we've made our readers wait long enough. And so my goal was, I don't want to make our readers wait 1 second longer than they have to. When this Kickstarter wraps, we not only are working with Comic Impressions again, our printer for the previous two, so they know how the thing's supposed to look. We're also working with the fulfillment team at Laguna Studios. So a guy who's writing four books and has a baby due next month is not packing and shipping your stuff. You don't have to worry about me being the bottleneck. They've fulfilled over 50 Kickstarters already. They're very experienced. So when you get your survey, all I need is your name and your shipping address. So we're really trying to make this no muss, no fuss. However, as a result, because I'm not doing backer kit, this Kickstarter, we've added in a bunch of different add-ons. So you can get every single trade I've ever worked on as an add-on, either individually, or get it as a bundled set. But let's also talk about the book a little bit, because, you know, I want to make sure that everybody gets bang for their buck, because Kickstarter, I love the community. They're so adventurous and omnivorous in their tastes. They're willing to go off the beaten path. It's an artisanal product. They're willing to pay an artisanal price point for it. I still want to make sure you're getting your money's worth. So first off, the OZ is double-sized. It's 44 pages, every single issue. On top of that, every single issue you buy, you get the digital behind-the-scenes material. So you're going to get the scripts. You're going to get the inks. You're going to get the colors. So you'll be able to sort of see how this thing progressed from start to finish. Also, you're going to get every backer gets a PDF of Spencer and Locke number one, the book that started my career. You're also going to get a PDF of Going to the Chapel number one, my Die Hard at a Wedding action rom-com. You're also going to get the PDF of Roxy Rewind, my superhero one-shot with George Santiago Jr. It's like classic Spider-Man meets Back to the Future or Life is Strange. So that's really fun. So you're already getting 108 pages worth of stuff just for the basic tier.
Oh, is that it? Nothing else, well, David?
There's more, my friends, because we've got some stretch goals planned. And our first stretch goal, which I'm very excited to talk about, is adding 16 more pages to the book. So that's 8 more story pages and 8 more pinups. And that is not going to slow down the campaign. We've already got everything worked out. So that's the first stretch goal. So you will actually get 116 pages worth of story just on the base campaign. We've also got some other exciting stretch goals coming. We've got a bookmark from Ruben Mocho. We've got a digital EP of songs recorded by my good friend George Marston, the OZ tapes, including Heart of Tin, which was our theme for issue one. But we've also got a special closing credit song that George is recording presently. We've also got, this is my favorite. So we are not doing a print this year, but that's because we are doing a fully illustrated map of the occupied zone. So that is, yeah. So you're going to be able to see kind of all the different things of the OZ illustrated by Kenneth Wagnon, who did a variant cover for issue one. Like I said, we're trying to make things flexible for people, really at every price point and every interest level. So you can get, if you like any of the variant covers from the previous issues, you can mix and match for all of that. You can get any trades of mine, whether you want to read Spencer and Locke, which is out of print, or Scott's Honor, which I believe is locked in the Diamond Warehouse right now, or Space Ghost Volume 1, which is also locked in the Diamond Warehouse. You can, anything I have written solo, you can get that. 10-Ton Titan Terrier is available as an add-on as well. And those are sort of just, it's kind of the tip of the iceberg. We've got some other fun stretch goals that we're adding to the mix. But I'm trying to make this thing not only of value for our readers, but I'm also trying to make it accessible. So if you missed the previous two issues, you didn't know who I was, that's okay. We've got print and digital catch-up tiers at a discount, so you can get issues 1 through 3 in one shot. Or like I said, if you were there for the first campaign and missed the second, or somehow vice versa, you can catch up on any issues you've missed. They're all available as a la carte options.
Awesome. David, this is all so awesome.
Yeah.
I wish you luck on this project, but clearly at this point you don't necessarily need it.
I will all the luck I can get, please.
I will definitely wish you luck on the new kid. Good luck with that. That's amazing.
Thank you. Well, that's why, you know, back the Kickstarter, you know, tinyurl.com/theozcomic. That's my last pitch, is because diapers don't come cheap. in all seriousness, thank you so much for having me. This book is so important to me. I think it is some of the best work I've ever been fortunate enough to work on. Ruben Rojas, I can tell you, the artwork was worth the wait. He did such an amazing job sticking the landing on this. Whitney Kogar and him could be on any big two book tomorrow, and they would crush it. And I hope they'll have me write it if they do. And, you know, DC Hopkins, just our amazingly talented and patient letterer, who has made all my dialogue sing and not look overwritten. You know, this is a top shelf team working on a story that I believe in with every ounce of my Tin Man's heart. So I think this is, if you're curious about any of my work, I would say this is the book to read. So back early, back often, tell your friends. We would love to have you join us as a Yellow Brick Road warrior. please join us at the OZ today.
Awesome. Nice. David, thank you so much again. Hopefully we'll talk very soon.
Yes, yeah. Look forward to it.
Sit on crappy couches and they